Hello and welcome to the first in what is hopefully going to be a regular feature every week here at the Star. We're going to have a Q&A with the Star's Sheffield United writer. I nearly just said football writer, but it is specifically Sheffield United, mostly. James Shield is here with me. I'm the sports editor at the Star, Chris Holt. And every week we're going to be here just to answer your questions on anything that's going on at United. Obviously, it's been a very, very busy week or so at Bramall Lane and Shercliffe. And so if you've got any questions, put them in the comments below. We've had a few sent in to us already. And James, we're going to crack on.
Okay. I'll put the glasses on. That's a sign things are getting serious.
It'll make you look even more intelligent than you already are.
Well, thank you.
We're going straight in, as expected, I think, with so kind of transfer-related question. This one comes from Paul, who says, does the team still need strengthening now that we've got a change in management? So they basically what he's saying there, obviously, what we felt before was that Jukanović felt that he needed three players to come in the team, and two of those being wingers and one holding midfielder, I believe that was the three he was looking for. Given the change in management, and we know already that there's not going to be too much money, if anything, in the pot for Paul Heckingbottom, do we still think there will be players coming in, and will those positions be the same, do you think?
Yeah, I think the squad certainly needs strengthening. That's what football clubs do. Every transfer window, successful clubs, they don't stand still because they don't exist within a vacuum. Everyone around them in the Championship, everyone around them in the Premier League, if you're a Premier League club, League One, League Two, etc., they all strengthen, excuse me, during transfer windows. So you have to keep moving forward. So the short answer is yes, of course they will need strengthening. The slightly more detailed answer is where they need strengthening is probably going to change, because I think it's fair to say that one of the tensions that led to Slavisa Jukanović's departure was that demand for new players, and the demand for new players in specific positions that you've mentioned, two wingers, one holding midfielder. That clearly signalled that he wanted to probably have a complete change away, completely shift away from that 3-5-2 formation that Sheffield United have played for so long. Paul Heckingbottom, I think, will probably stick a little bit closer to that, although he's not going to be wedded to it. He showed that during his spell in caretaker charge last season. So I think they will need to strengthen. I think you're right to say that there isn't going to be a great deal of money to spend, and what, you know, that sum has already been eroded by the severance package that Sheffield United will have had to have paid Slavisa and his three members of staff who came with him. But I think it's going to need to be strengthened in different areas. The one thing as well that I think it's absolutely important to mention, and we spoke with Jack Lester and Stuart McCall yesterday, actually, just for sort of like an informal on-the-record chat, if there is such a thing. And they both mentioned as well, Stuart McCall in particular, that the first team squad is very, very sort of heavily top-loaded. In layman's terms, what he's saying is there's far too many strikers at the football club and they're very weak in other positions. So I think that's a sign that what Paul Heckingbottom and Stuart McCall and Paul Mitchell, who remains the club's head of recruitment, are going to look to do is trade in this window. I think you'll see some strikers shaved off the top of the squad, and you'll possibly see some midfielders and defenders coming in.
On a similar theme, we've seen Chris Basham, of course, come in over the past couple of weeks, having been, I think it's fair to say, frozen out to a certain extent, in that you know there was a change of formation and he didn't quite fit the bill for Jukanović. Carl M has sent us a message saying, will you now think that he will do enough to get himself a new contract? He's obviously one of those many players who's out of contract at the end of the season. the club have an option on him, I believe. I think possibly down to appearances.
Yeah,
but that's the circumstances seem to have changed a little bit in recent weeks now that he's back in the team. And as you say there, Paul Heckenbottom's going to be more closely aligned to that 3-5, or sorry, well, the three centre-backs anyway.
Certainly the three at the back, yeah.
Yeah, the three at the back that that obviously Chris Wilder shaped when he was in charge. So that's surely more of an opportunity for Basham to be getting a lot more games than he was early on in the season.
Yeah, well, you're certainly going to think he's going to have an opportunity to get an awful lot closer to that that trigger point within his contract where the club have that option then to offer him a new deal or Bash gets a new deal. I'm not going to lie, we're not exactly sure what that is, but I would imagine it's around the sort of the 25-30 sort of start mark. I think he's going to be a significant player going forward, yes, and a lot more significant than he was under Slavisa Jokanović, and that's purely because of that change in formation that you just spoke about, Chris. I think, listen, I'm one of Chris Basham's biggest fans at the football club. I really like him as a guy. I really like him as a footballer. But I think it is fair to say that probably a little bit like Jack O'Connell, actually, who hopefully we'll see again at some point in the future. But I think the longer that goes on, the more doubts there are about that. I think it's fair to say that sort of overlapping role as one of the two outside centre-halves, it was almost tailor-made for Chris Basham and it was almost tailor-made for Jack O'Connell because it playing that way accentuated all of their strengths and sort of disguised all of their weaknesses. Every player's got those. That's no criticism. But they were roles that just brought the best out of those players. I think it's fair to say that when you saw Chris Basham play in a back four, he didn't look as strong. He didn't look as comfortable because, of course, you know, he's not really a defender by trade. He's only really turned into a defender since joining Sheffield United. And, of course, Nigel Adkins was one of the first ones to try him there at wing-back all those years ago. So I think he will be given an opportunity. I think the chances are now, and especially, you know, with United, I suspect, having to trade during the transfer window for financial and for sporting reasons, you do suspect, unless it's been set at a ridiculously high bar, that he will trigger that clause within his contract. So, listen, I'm guessing the situation is going to come down to a purely financial consideration for the football club at the end of the season. I'm not putting words in his mouth, and he's not discussed Chris Basham explicitly. I think it's far too early for that. But I'm guessing that he is the type of player that Paul Heckenbottom is going to want around the football club, not least just for his sort of professionalism and experience as well.
You mentioned him there a second ago. Chris has emailed in today. Or asking around about the latest on Jack O'Connell. Do we know anything? I think Jokanović mentioned him a week or so ago, but I don't think there was much of an update. Do we have anything?
No, we don't. No, we don't at all. And listen, I think it's fair to say that the club are not particularly keen on discussing this subject. We've approached it on a number of occasions as journalists throughout the season. Slavisa Jokanović has always sort of, you know, or when he was in charge, has always sort of batted those questions away slightly and saying, well, we hope to see him back at some point in the future. I think the big concern for me about Jack is that, you know, he's been out for just over a year now. That's happened to plenty of footballers. But I think the big concern for me personally is that he still seems no closer to actually making a comeback. We still don't have a firm date for that. And personally, as I'm saying, I'm talking in a personal capacity here, that really, really does concern me. But no, there is no date for him to make a first team comeback. Slavisa Jokanović, while he was still here, said, well, I hope to see him before the end of the season. But he didn't sound particularly confident that was going to be the case. Although, listen, that he may just well be from the Jose Mourinho school of managers. And, you know, that what I mean by that is that he wasn't particularly interested in, I'm not saying he was, but some managers aren't particularly interested in knowing where injured players are in terms of their recovery until they get very close to that recovery being completed.
Until they can call them into their team.
Absolutely, yeah. But no, in short, no, we don't have a date for Jack's comeback. And listen, there's no point in dressing it up any other way. That is hugely concerning.
Another question came in. This one didn't have a name. You spoke with him yesterday, Jack Lester, along with Stuart McCall. What is Jack Lester's role going to be going forward? I wasn't expecting him to be in the first team setup, obviously, as he was at the weekend there. Is that the sort of thing that's going to be happening going forward, or is that a case of filling the bench, for want of a better term, until Paul Heckingbottom is able to bring in more coaches, which he alluded to last week in his press conference?
Well, first off, Paul Heckingbottom has said that he wants to bring another coach into the football club. And he said he wants that coach to be somebody who has got strengths that he hasn't. He clearly feels that Stuart McCall has got, you know, he's good at things that he's perhaps not necessarily so good at himself, and vice versa. And that pattern will continue with the next appointment. Jack Lester's role, it was quite interesting. We asked him about this, and you're right, Chris. His title, Head of Player Development, would sort of suggest that it's more of like a sort of an admin role, as it were, sort of an office-based role, sort of looking at the strategy about bringing players through the system and how best to sort of integrate them into the first team, when to integrate them into it, and possibly, you know, when and where to send them out on loan. But it was interesting speaking to Jack, because he did actually at one point refer to himself as, quote, a first team coach, unquote, and then sort of spoke at length, and we've touched on some of this in the paper, about how he was going to work with the strikers within the squad. He said that's something that I've always enjoyed doing, even when he was still a player himself, passing on little bits of information to them. And he said that's something that they've actually been doing in the academy for quite some time, bringing in former defenders to talk to the defenders in the academy setup, bringing in midfielders to do the same with the midfielders, etc., etc. So I think what you will probably see is I think Jack is going to continue to be wrapped pretty closely around Paul Heckingbottom. I think the two of them have obviously got a good working relationship. Paul obviously stepping up from his role with the under-23s to become permanent manager. So Paul and Jack have worked very closely together during their time at Bramall Lane so far. So I think you'll continue to see that. Whether or not he'll be such a visible presence in the technical area, I suspect not. I still wouldn't be surprised to see him down there, but, you know, it's not the biggest technical area at Bramall Lane, is it? If we've got another coach in there, sort of dancing around inside it with Paul Heckingbottom and Stuart McCall, it's going to get pretty crowded. They're going to be tripping over each other. But I think, you know, you're still going to see Jack pretty closely involved with the first team, both on match days and also sort of as a visible presence, as it were, on the touchline and on the training ground as well.
The cynic in me here. And I'm not suggesting this is the case, actually. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. Does it feel like we've got, whereas you see clubs nowadays have a specific person for a specific role, and there could be upwards of, I don't know, 10, 15, maybe even 20 different types of coaches for certain things. Does it feel like this is another case of United cutting their cloth a little bit and having, you know, one man doing maybe two or three different jobs at the club rather than, you know, having specific coaches for those positions?
Well, I listen, I think it's fair to say, yeah, there's people down there, and Jack is probably one of them, who are going to be sort of working to a brief that is possibly a lot more wide-ranging and expansive had they been at another football club. So, yeah, you're probably right to some degree with that, Chris, yeah. And I think as well, there does seem to be a little bit of, let's see how this develops as the whole thing goes along.
Because I'm not even saying it's a bad thing. I mean, fair argument for there being, you know, too many cooks and all that. So, you know, perhaps it is a way forward, and you never know, they could be revolutionary in their thinking here. But it's just interesting because it kind of goes against the grain a little bit in terms of how high level football works these days.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing happening is as well. And listen, when Sheffield United called the press conference last Thursday to confirm Slavisa Jokanovic's departure and confirm the appointment of Paul Heckingbottom and also Jack Lester's sort of promotion, if you want to look at it like that. Although, obviously, people involved with youth development would disagree, and Stuart McCall's return to the football club. We did ask on numerous occasions what the exact parameters of their sort of different roles were. And listen, we didn't really get an answer on that. It was only when we sat down with Stuart and we always knew what Stuart's role was. Will be. He's assistant manager. But, you know, Jack in particular, we only were able to sort of put some flesh on the bones of that when we actually sat down with him at the training ground earlier this week. So I think it is fair to say that some of this is being worked out as they go along. You know, the board member who spoke about the strategic vision in response to one of my questions sort of very, very openly said, well, you know, strategic visions change over time. You can make of that what you will, but clearly, you know, they're a football club that are happy to make changes and happy to sort of change the way that they do things in response to sort of events. Hopefully what will happen is, though, that there'll be a core sort of message and a core methodology throughout all of that, and there will need to be if the football club's going to become a success. But listen, if Jack Lester proves, for example, if Jack Lester can help get Rhian Brewster firing, and you know the kid's now scored two goals in his last three starts, Jack Lester can't take the credit for that, by the way. And I like Jack, but you know, obviously, one of those goals came under Slavisa Jokanovic, so he can't quite take the credit for that just yet. But if he can get Rhian Brewster firing on all cylinders, for example, you can bet your bottom dollar that Jack Lester is going to be taking training with the strikers pretty much every day up there at the academy. So, you know, of course, yeah, this will sort of work its way out. The system will be work, you know, as they go along, and it will also depend on results. And it will, despite what anyone at the football club says.
Yeah. I think out of everything that was said last week, that was one of the more standout lines.
Yeah. And you know what? Listen, Paul Heckingbottom, he's not daft enough to think that his reign will not be characterised by results either. He's very politely, but very firmly already put that to bed.
Well, yeah. I mean, could you imagine him using it as an excuse? if United lose in a row, and he gets called into the office, and he's like, yeah, "Well, results don't really matter, do they?"
Well, he can use that if he ever finds himself coming under pressure, can't he? I'm sure his agent has got that sort of tucked away in his business folio, as it were, that he might bring into meetings at some point. But listen, joking aside, Paul Heckingbottom is a former professional footballer and a professional coach, now a football manager. I'll have to get that title right. Even if nobody else at the football club, well, the fans always will be, but even if nobody else at the football club is judging him by results, you can bet your bottom dollar he'll be judging himself by results.
We just had a comment in from Chris here. I'm just trying to decipher a little bit. And it's a fairly interesting point. Chris saying here that the three, presumably he's talking about Paul Heckingbottom, Stuart McCall, and Jack Lester, have not had particularly successful managerial careers to date. And let's hope that the sum is greater than the parts. That's not a bad point to make, really. And actually, it would be very Sheffield United for that to be the case. Isn't that a fair point to make? That very often the successes at Sheffield United are based upon the team being greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, no, I understand where Chris is coming from actually on that, and it may well be the case. I think it's important to point out with Paul Heckingbottom and Stuart McCall. I think if anything else, you're right, their records aren't, you know, on paper particularly remarkable. They're not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not absolutely stunning. But I think, if anything, rather than being guilty of not being particularly effective managers, which I think they both have been at times in their careers, I think what possibly the charge you could level at them is that they've been guilty of making bad choices. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm always reminded of something when you talk about this type of thing, that Nigel Clough once said when he was he was the manager at Sheffield United, and he obviously Nigel's dad, you know, for me the greatest manager ever. And he said, you know, and I remember asking him once what piece would — I'll get back to Chris's question in a minute here. I'm going full politician mode at the moment, but — and I always remember I asked Nigel what was the best piece of advice that your dad ever gave you when you went into management. And he said, rather than choose your football club, son, he said — imagine him pointing his finger — he said, choose your chairman. And I think that was, you know, you can see that throughout Nigel's career, going back to Burton, where he obviously had a really good relationship with the board. And I think that was good advice. And you look at Paul, I think he was a victim of circumstances at Leeds, whereby came in just before a new owner took charge of the football club. And I think when that happens, you know, the people at Leeds, they wanted to make a statement signing. They wanted to really sort of show that they mean business. And listen, even Paul Heckingbottom is not going to argue with the choice they made bringing Marcelo Bielsa in. I think it's fair to say that worked. You know, he went to Barnsley, obviously began his career there. There were issues there at the time. And then he went to Hibs, and again, and you know, I think he started off, you know, really well at Easter Road. But then again, there was a change of ownership. There was a change of direction at the football club, and he almost had the rug pulled out from under his feet there. So I think he's been unfortunate. I think Stuart as well. And do you know what? I actually think this is a good thing, even though it's been to his detriment at the times. I think he's allowed his heart to rule his head with some of the choices that he's made as a manager. You know, I mean, he obviously started his career in Solchards with Bradford City. And I can remember going up to see Stuart at Valley Parade at the time. It'll always be Valley Parade to me, not one of these ridiculous new sponsorship deals that, now I've said that, we'll probably see at Bramall Lane at some point in the future. But, you know, that football club is in a mess when he took charge. I think it was always going to be difficult to do anything there. He's gone back again because obviously it's a club that's really close to his heart. When he was in charge at Rangers, you know, that was a really, really tough period in that great football club's history as well. And he didn't do a bad job there at all. I think you've seen with Stuart that, you know, when he's given a decent set of tools to work with, as he had at Motherwell, that, you know, he's a really, really good manager and a really good coach. So I think they've been guilty of sort of bad choices and letting their hearts rule their heads at times. But listen, that's no bad thing. There's enough ruthlessness in football, isn't there? You know.
Yeah, Certainly, you couldn't level lack of loyalty at Stuart, given the amount of times that he went back to Bradford and the troubles that they had, and he obviously felt that he wanted to try and steer them out of
this. Yeah, so, absolutely. And if you're going to have a fault, that's not a bad one to have, is it? Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on from that. We've got a couple of questions left. One of them back is very, very interesting. This one, actually, this comes in for Jay. Robin Olsen picked up an injury at a time when it kind of made a decision a little bit easier because his form hadn't been great. Wes Fotheringham's come in and performed admirably. I think he's made a couple of good saves. He hasn't actually had loads to do in the games that he has come in, but he's performed okay. Jay wants to know if you would keep Wes in the team when Robin Olsen gets back fit.
First off, I'm just going to have a little bit of a dig at Jay here because he's pulled the rug totally out from under my feet because I'm just writing on something about this for the paper. So shame on you, Jay. But no, joking aside, yeah, I would keep Wes Fotheringham in between the posts. There will clearly be a temptation to bring Robin Olsen back because of the size of the investment that Sheffield United will have made in him. No player comes from Roma on the cheap. So, yeah, there will be a draw to do that. There will be possibly a little bit of pressure that the coaching staff will put on themselves to bring Robin back when he's fit. But Wes has done absolutely nothing that to warrant being dropped. And I think it does make it very, very difficult to continue peddling the message behind the scenes that, listen, if you've got to be ready for your chance, and then, you know, you've got to be ready to perform well, and if you take that, you will get an opportunity. Robin Olsen is not Lionel Messi. There are certain players, you know, when they're fit in world football, they are going to play, and I think other players accept that. But I think Wes would have every reason to feel really hard done by if the minute, and listen, unless he has a couple of absolute clangers between now and then, I think he'll have every, if he carries on in the same vein, he'll have every reason to feel really hard done by if he isn't allowed to continue in the team. I think just one little thing to say about Robin Olsen. Listen, he hasn't done great. He will admit that in himself. He has admitted that himself when he's spoken to us before and after games. I think it's fair to say that in the not so distant past, we have also seen another goalkeeper not make a particularly strong start to his second spell with Sheffield United, if you get my drift, but then sort of recover from that and go on to become Arsenal's undisputed one and number one, sorry, and I think it's fair to say probably England's number one in the not-so-distant future. I am, of course, talking about Aaron Ramsdale. The difference being, of course, is Robin Olsen isn't Sheffield United's player. But, yeah, I would, Jay, keep Wes Fotheringham in the team if he continues in the same form.
Finally, this one's from Paul. It's very broad, and I don't know how you're going to answer this one.
You've got me worried now.
Well, no, it's not that bad. It's a fairly obvious question, but it's just I think it's just so much still to come. Do you think the playoffs are realistic?
Yeah, I do. I still think they're achievable. I still think they would have... Listen, I thought that when Slavisa Jokanović was here. There is a fair bit of traffic to go through in terms of the league position. Sheffield United are up to 13th now. But in terms of the points, the gap isn't so great. So I've seen nothing to change my mind. And obviously Sheffield United have won their last two games. So, yeah, of course I think the playoffs are achievable. I think it will be difficult because even though, as I say, that points gap between themselves and sixth place isn't so great, you know, they are going to have to outperform a lot of football clubs between now and the end of the season to actually sneak into that top six. But I certainly think that it's achievable. Fulham showed that under Slavisa Jokanović when they were in, you know, sort of languishing and flapping around towards the in the lower reaches of the division before going up under him via the playoffs. And the other thing is, I've got to say, I don't know what you think. What was his name?
Paul.
Paul. Sorry, I don't know what Paul thinks either. I do think the Championship this year, you take Fulham, you take AFC Bournemouth and possibly West Brom. I think they've just sort of, you've seen they've changed the way they're playing recently, becoming a little bit more football focused, if you like. I think you take those three teams out of it. I think this is a bog average division this year as well.
I agree, actually. I don't want to take anything away from the likes of QPR and Coventry who find themselves up there, but they're no great shakes, are they?
Yeah. Really? And I think that makes it even more possible for Sheffield United to do it.
Okay, we'll wrap it up. That's the end of the question and answer session this week. We'll be back next week, hopefully, for another one of these. I can't imagine we're going to have as many incidents or subjects to go through as we have done this week, given what's been going on over the past 7 days at Sheffield United. But you never know. If there's one thing we've learned, James, in this job, is you can't tell what's going to happen next. So thanks everybody who sent their questions in. Thanks to Chris who's commented there, and thanks to James for answering them. And incidentally, we'll be back with our regular podcast towards the end of the week, possibly Friday, maybe tomorrow. You never know. We'll just wait and see, and we'll go over events of last week, the match specific, that is, and looking ahead to the weekend's match against Cardiff City. So thanks for joining us. Thanks, James.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I will see you again soon.